And as we do so, we're going to open our Bibles again and turn to James and chapter 5. We turn to the letter of James right towards the end of the New Testament because since the summer, since September, we've just been tracing our way through this letter. And the extraordinary thing is that when we read the Bible, and for us as we read this letter, we discover in it that the writer James was writing with extraordinary wisdom and insight for those he was writing to. But then what we also discover is that we can take the wisdom that James was writing to those in particular he was writing to, and we can receive it for ourselves. And we can learn how better to live for ourselves, for others, and for God by receiving the wisdom of the words that we read. And today, we're in James chapter 5, the first 12 verses. Now listen, you rich people. Weep and wail because of the misery that is coming upon you. Your wealth has rotted and the moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered innocent men who were not opposing you. Be patient then, brothers, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, and how patient he is for the autumn and spring rains. You too, be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. Don't grumble against each other, brothers, or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. Brothers, as an example of patience in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. As you know, we consider blessed those who have persevered. You have heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy. Above all, my brothers, do not swear, not by heaven or by earth or by anything else. Let your yes be yes and your no, no, or you will be condemned. And the title of our reflections on James has been The Journey Home. James begins his letter in chapter 1, verse 1, addressing those of the 12 tribes, those of Israel, who no longer live in their spiritual home, Jerusalem, but have been scattered to the ends of the earth. And the struggle for them, as people who love God, is we want to be back in our home, in our spiritual home, as they saw it, in Jerusalem. But for many of them, there was no way they were ever going to get there. And so this letter is written to those people who want to be somewhere else. And James is saying, this is how you can live well where you are. You don't have to change all your circumstances. You don't have to have a better job or a different situation or whatever it is. You can live well. Just receive the wisdom that God would grant to you. And we've traced through this letter, and as we've done so, we have seen the wisdom that James has given. And it might very well just apply to us, just what I've said, that sense of, if only things were different. If only my situation were different. If only I lived in Australia or New Zealand or wherever, you know, if only. And yet the wisdom comes to us of God has put you where you are. Now live and live well. And so that's been our theme, the journey home. But today we have the cheery theme of facing judgment. Doesn't that put a smile upon your face? Okay? And that's one of the great things about reflecting together through a book of the Bible. Is, you see, normally I can just pick my favorite themes. I can pick my favorite things to speak about. And I'm sure you recognize that. But when we trace our way and reflect on a particular book in the Bible, I cannot, in a sense, predict what's going to come up. I don't know what's been happening in your life this last week, such that what we reflect on today will be absolutely right for you today. And that's one of the unpredictable and extraordinary things. As we read God's word, it comes to us in a fresh way. And the passage today is about facing judgment. The Apostle James gives us a very clear warning. One day, you will have to answer for what you've done. And he actually says in verse 9, the judge is standing at the door. For the Apostle James, there is a sense. This is not a distant event. Don't ever regard this as a distant event. Don't think in some way you're going to evade it. You will answer for everything you've done. You will answer for everything you've said. You will be called to account for the life that you have lived. Now, for us today, it doesn't matter how old you are, whether you're in your 80s or 90s, or you're in your teens or 20s, it doesn't matter. For every single one of us, the fact remains true. We will all have to answer for what we've done. How does that make you feel? The wisdom comes to us not that we should hear it just occasionally, so that when we read through James together, we're reminded, oh yes, I must remember when the day of judgment comes, I'm going to have to answer. The wisdom comes to us such that we will hold it every day. And we will live on the understanding that we will answer for everything we've done. We may not like that, but that is the truth. That is the reality. God is portrayed to us as a judge. He will put things right. He will call us to account for everything we've done wrong. But also in his judgment, of course, he will reward for that which we've done well. But facing judgment. Four issues that we have in this passage that we've got, and it's helpful if you keep your Bible open to it because we're going to reflect back on this. The first issue that we face is that of wealth and possessions. We will answer for what we do with wealth and possessions. Secondly, we'll answer for what we do about justice. What we do about justice. Thirdly, we'll answer for what we do in terms of relationships. Fourthly, we will answer for what we say. Our word, your word. Okay? So we have four issues to think about that James, the Apostle James, mentions to the believers scattered throughout the world. And then there are two encouragements to make life work for you. How do we deal with all this? How do we make life work for us? Well, the first is wealth and possessions. Wealth and possessions, we all, in some manner, either have wealth and possessions, or we will one day have wealth and possessions. And here's the nub. We might think, well, after I die, my wealth will count for nothing. Do you think that? Now, it might be that you have a bank account or whatever, and you think, well, it doesn't matter if I go in debt. because one day I'll die and then they won't be able to get the money. Is that a good way to live? I don't know. And we might think, what I do with my wealth, it doesn't count anymore. There might be that sense for us of, however I deal with the money that God ultimately gives to me, the money we earn, we understand God has gifted us with gifts so that we can get a particular job and we can have the money that we have. We're able to have the possessions that we have. And we might think, well, I'll try to use them well, but after death, they count for nothing. And it may well be that the people James is writing to, it may well be that he's heard stories. Oh, it doesn't matter. We're going to die soon. We're suffering persecution, whatever. We'll die. The way we've kind of just hoarded wealth for ourselves and lived in a life of luxury, as James puts it here, it doesn't matter. And he says, yes, it does. Even after death, what you've done with your wealth and possessions will count. How do we know that? Well, in our passage, verse 3. So if you have your Bible there, what does it say? It says, first of all, your gold and silver are corroded. And then it says this, their corrosion will testify against you. So on the day of judgment, your gold and silver that you think, oh, well, I've died, it's nothing to do with it anymore. It's almost like your gold and silver, your wealth is going to stand up and testify, this is what he did, this is what she did with me, with the gold and silver, with the wealth. It'll be there speaking. And so what we do with our wealth and possessions matters. What you're doing right now, what you're planning to do with your wealth and possessions, you will be called to account for. And James wants to make clear, whoever you are, wherever you are, it's a big issue. Why is it a big issue? Because it is an issue of your heart. I love the story about John Wesley, the great preacher. You know, the last part of a man to be converted was his wallet. Why? Because his wallet was closest to his heart. If you keep your wallet there, I don't know. But that's what he said. The last part of a man to be converted is his wallet because it's closest to his heart. Okay, so that's the first issue to think about. Wealth and possessions, what you do with them, don't think you'll die and then they'll be forgotten. They won't. They will stand up and testify against you or for you on the day of judgment. The next issue is that of justice. The issue is justice. Let's have a look at our passage. Verse 4, chapter 5, verse 4. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You lived on earth in luxury, self-indulgence. You fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered innocent men who are not opposing you. And the issue here is justice. Now, James here particularly is writing about those people who had enough money to employ people, what does it say, to mow their fields. Now, I don't know how many of you have got fields that you need mowing. And you might think immediately, oh, well, it doesn't count for me because I haven't got a field to mow. And it's very easy for us to say, oh, this has nothing to do with me. The issue that James is addressing is that of justice. It's about dealing rightly with people. It's about hearing the cries of the poor. That's the people who haven't been paid. Hearing the cries of the poor and responding in a way that honours Christ with love and mercy and compassion. So perhaps taking our wealth and possessions and thinking, well, I've got enough, I will give it to the poor. The issue that James is addressing is that of justice, acting rightly. Now, I'm not sure that any of you have got fields that need mowing. I don't know if any of you employ people like this. But the question we have to ask is, what are those issues that cry out to us, that we hear, and we can do something about? They may be issues of justice that are across the other side of the world. They may be issues of justice that are very close to home. And if you're anything like me, it's far easier to respond to the issues over the other side of the world than it is to respond to the issues of your neighbour and help your neighbour. That's my experience. So the challenge and the issue here is justice. And the question is, what have you done to change the things you can change? Facing judgment, being called to account for what we have done and what we've said, the issue of justice, acting rightly, hearing the cries of the poor and responding. There's lots in the world that, let's face it, we can do nothing about. I don't know how many of you watch the TV news and you just hear the news in Tunisia or Australia or Brazil or wherever, and you just think, oh man, if I could do something, I would, but I can't. And there's so much of what goes on in the world that we can do nothing about. But the key is, what could I do? What are the voices I do hear crying out? And what could I do about them? So that's the second issue. The first is about wealth and possessions. They will testify against us. The second issue is justice. And the third, you may remember, is that of relationships. Relationships in chapter 5 and verse 9. Don't grumble against each other, brothers, and I'll include their sisters as well, or you will be judged. This is a rhetorical question. Do not answer it. Who's been grumbled at this week? Right, it's a rhetorical. You haven't got to say anything. Okay. This is the thing. Relationships. James says, don't grumble against one another, or you'll be judged. Now, James, you see, has already in this letter talked about relationships and how important it is, particularly within the church, within the family of Christ, people who say we belong together, we're following Christ together. How easy it is to grumble against one another, but he warns against it. And the passage that we looked at last week, don't slander one another. Anyone who speaks against his brother or judges him speaks against the law and judges it. As you slander your brother, or as you grumble against your brother, you're saying your gifts aren't good enough. And God's saying, well, hang on, who gave the gift? It was me. Are you saying I'm not good enough? Don't grumble. And again, what's the issue? The issue is the issue of our hearts, whether it's wealth and possessions, or it's issues of justice or relationships. It's about our hearts. Relationships. We will be called to account to answer for what we do in terms of relationships. And already you're probably sparking off all sorts of friendships, relationships you just need to be aware of, that are sore, that hurt, things that have been said. How do we deal with those difficult relationships and friendships? Because God is watching with compassion, but he's watching and he sees and knows it all. The fourth area is your word. We will answer for what we say. And right at the end of the passage that I read, above all, my brothers, verse 12, do not swear And this is not saying curse words or anything like that. Do not swear, not by heaven or by earth or by anything else. Let your yes be yes and your no, no, or you will be condemned. I was watching TV a few months ago, and there was a TV presenter, and it wasn't live TV, but it was almost like a reality show. That's probably not the right description. It was the kind of show where this TV presenter had traveled, I think, to the United States, and the TV camera was following him around, you know, documentary kind of style. And this TV presenter, he got into trouble because of something he had apparently said. And his response in his defense was, "I didn't say it." And then he said, "I swear on the lives of my children, I didn't say it." And I thought, what an awful thing to say. And that is what's in view here. It's that swearing. I didn't say it. I swear by heaven. And God's going, no, you don't. I swear by earth. And everybody else on earth goes, no, you don't. Don't swear by anything. Your children, your parents. Sometimes I hear, you know, I swear on my parents' grave or whatever it is. Let your yes be yes and your no, no. We will be called to account for what we say. Can people trust the words that we say? Without the caveat of, I promise, how many times do you say, if I speak honestly to you, or to be honest with you? Do you ever use that phrase? Do you? I think, what are you being the rest of the time? Are you being honest or not? Do you know? And that's the kind of thing that James is talking about. You know, just let your yes be yes. And again, it comes back to the heart. What are we trying to do? Are we trying to deceive people, deceive ourselves, so we're not confident in our own yes and no? Do we think that people don't trust us? And we have to somehow prove it. We'll prove it with our life, not by swearing in that manner. And so there's a call to be truthful and dependable. So there were four issues simply to think about. The first is about wealth and possessions. All of us will be called to account for what we did with our money and with our possessions. The second issue is to do with justice, where we hear the cry of the poor. What did we do? Issues that we could change. Not the issues we can't change, the issues that we can change. Thirdly, it's about relationships. Are we grumbling, ill of heart in terms of our relationships? And fourthly, about your word, being dependable and true. But I did say there were going to be two ways to make your life work for you. And this is what James mentions, and they're very simply this. First of all, be patient. Be patient. James says, just like the farmer, you know, he puts seeds in the ground, and what does he do? It's right, it's a rhetorical question. What does he do? He waits. You see, the farmer can't actually do anything about the seed. It's in. Now, I know they've all got, we've got fancy fertilizers and all the rest of it now, but once the seed's gone in, just wait. Look at the sky, hope it's going to rain. We wait. And the farmer waits patiently. How do we make life work for us? Learn patience. This God will always give you what you need when you need it. Learn patience. It's a difficult thing to learn. So, two ways to make life work for you. First of all, learn to be patient. God will give you what you need. Not what you want, but what you need when you need. And secondly, persevere. And here James talks about Job, a man who stuck with it through thick and thin. And if you read through the book of Job, dreadful things happened, and yet he refused to give up on his faith in God. God will give me what I need. Persevere. And there was a man in my parents' church, when I was young, Fred Anderson. And he was only a small chap. I don't know how tall he was, probably 5 foot or something. He was very small. For me, even when I was 10, I was probably taller than Fred. And he used to, you know, always have a good word to say. And then he used to say, keep on keeping on. That was his thing. He used to just say, keep on keeping on. And that's what perseverance is. Just keep on keeping on. You know, there's no worse thing than getting stuck, not going anywhere. Just keep on keeping on. Sometimes it's tough, sometimes it's easy, but keep on keeping on. So there's two things to make life work for us. Be patient and persevere.